Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And welcome into AOA, Agriculture of America. Thanks for being with us here today. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Today's program brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. We're going to talk markets here in just a second with Garrett Toy from Ag Trader Talk. Also coming up on today's show, we're going to get a look at what's happening in the sunflower industry. John Sandbach, executive director for the National Sunflower Association, is going to join us in segment two for an update. In segment three, pork exports are off to another strong start here for the year and for last month. We're going to talk about that with Dan Hallstrom from the U.S. Meat Export Federation after the bottom of the hour. And then at the end of the show, we'll take a look at news headlines, including USDA announcing this final rule here for the product of the USA label. We're going to get some details on that. Also, crop insurance deadlines are nearing to select your ARC or PLC coverage for this year. That's coming up on Friday. We're going to talk more about that here in news headlines at the end of our program. Well, let's dive into the markets. Kind of quiet to start off Tuesday's trade, but we got a few things we're taking note of in the marketplace. Joining us now, Garrett Toy with Ag Trader Talk. Garrett, it's great to have you back on the show with us here once again. And like I said, kind of a quiet overall start to the grain and oilseed trade on Tuesday morning, Garrett.
Yes, you know, we're up a quarter to 2 cents here in corn. We're up 5 to 7 cents in beans. I think yesterday the most interesting trade was in soft red wheat, where we had a, you know, last week we knew about some cancellations of soft red wheat from China. You know, those were confirmed over the course of Thursday and Friday, and then we had, you know, a third day on Monday that may have caught some people by surprise. You know, we spiked the market lower, and then we came right back. And that was actually some positive price action in here. I know that Brazilian values in corn were firmer because they're expecting some heat there, just enough to get people nervous. But this time of year, I don't think that heat is going to cause any significant or material damage to the corn crop. But I think the big thing here is just technicals. You know, May beans, we're starting to get up in this 1189 three quarters area, which is the 40-day moving average. We're trading beans to their highest level since mid-February. If we can get this front end up to 1197 and a quarter, then things might get a little bit more interesting and spur more short covering. That being said, is these stochastics are starting to get a little bit overbought here, so we'll see how much follow through we get. But in corn, you know, the great thing is you know, we're getting into these moving averages. We've seen buying each of the last 3 days on weakness, so I do think that we're seeing some short covering in here. We get above 442, which is the 40-day moving average. That it may open the door for a move to 450 in May corn. So, yeah, I mean, we're just kind of grinding higher here. I think we're starting to get to some areas where the farmer may engage a little bit more. The one thing I've been kind of preaching here is that two things is, you know, Brazilian soybean harvest is 50% complete, so this is about the time of year when we should be finding a seasonal harvest low, per se. But at the same time, the Brazilian farmer is kind of undersold, and they have beans to sell, so that may temper rallies in here.
Garrett, I know, thinking of Brazil, CONAB out Tuesday morning, and they lowered their soybean estimate and their all-corn production estimates slightly. The soybean estimate now 146.85, that's down from 149 last month. The all-corn production estimate 112.75, down from 113.6 last month. And both of those numbers are much lower than USDA's estimates. And everyone's kind of watching here. CONAB, private estimates, everything is much lower than USDA. What's your thoughts on some of those numbers that we're seeing out of Brazil right now?
I had this conversation with a Brazilian colleague of mine yesterday, and they seem to think that the USDA is closer than CONAB is, to be honest with you. The fact is, You know, Conab did cut the 146.9 today from 149.4, but they still have last year's crop at 154.6. And the USDA has slowly been increasing, you know, last year's Brazilian crop to 162. Well, you know, we know for a fact that, you know, Conab is wrong last year on the 154.6 because if you look at their actual exports, they'd have a negative carryout. So, you know, I think that, you know, what I'm being told is from my Brazilian colleagues that maybe the Conab's being a little political here. You know, I don't know. I mean, the people on the ground down there seem to think the USDA is closer, that it may come down a little bit, but not as bad as what Conab is forecasting.
Okay. Well, good thoughts there. We'll keep our eyes on it. Headline CPI data out here Tuesday morning as well, up a little bit, 0.4% month on month in February, up 3.2% year on year in February. Most of those numbers looked like they were in line to maybe slightly higher. Stocks looking pretty quiet here early on Tuesday in reaction to that news. Anything stand out to you in terms of the CPI data out and how that could affect the outside markets and money flow here today, Garrett?
And the dollars reacted firmly off of that news. You know, it really, this inflation numbers, for lack of a better term, have been very tacky. You know, they've been very resilient, and they're struggling to go down. So the fact that the CPI number came in a little bit higher, you know, obviously what's important to the ag trade is when the Fed starts cutting rates. And, you know, we've got a meeting here this month. I mean, they're expecting to keep rates unchanged. You look at out in June, you know, the market's anticipating maybe a 50% chance of a cut there. But, you know, we keep kicking this can forward of when we could potentially see an interest rate cut. And, you know, that's a little tiring for the trade, in my opinion.
Garrett, as well, real quick, livestock sector feels like cattle and hogs kind of going sideways here as of late. Do you get that same feeling in the protein sector right now?
Yeah, the market struggled. I mean, you've got fat cattle at a discount to cash here a little bit, but it's very choppy. And, you know, I think if the front end can hold 187, maybe we can build some support, but it is, the fats are really kind of lacking direction right now. And it's not really giving us any ideas of where we're going to go next. You know, it is interesting today. Hogs are, you know, the bull spreads are working in here. You know, front end is up 80. The furs are weaker out in the new crop, or in the December timeframes is what they call new crop. Down 72 at 76.80. But I think we kind of consolidate here a little bit.
Well, great thoughts as always. We do appreciate the time. Garrett Toy with Ag Trader Talk. Garrett, if folks want to reach out to you for questions, want to talk markets with you, what's the best way to get in touch with you, Garrett?
Sure, they can reach out on our toll-free line, 888-745-2080.
Well, we do appreciate it, Garrett. Thanks for joining us on AOA once again here, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Jesse. Take care.
Garrett Toy with Ag Trader Talk joining us here as we talk markets on AOA. Coming up next, we're going to take a look at the sunflower industry, get an update there with the executive director of the National Sunflower Association, John Sandbach. And he joins us next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants. Learn more at Cenex.com. We'll be back here on AOA right after the break. On the March episode of the Monthly Grind with the National Corn Growers Association, we learn about the newly launched Radical Challenge and the need for finding new uses for corn with Dr. Alex Buck, Director of Industrial Innovation at Iowa Corn, and Chad Epler, NCGA's Market Development Action Team Vice Chair.
The Radical Challenge is an open innovation challenge. It sets out to invest a minimum of $1.5 million checkoff dollars into startup and growth companies from around the world so that we can drive new uses for corn and develop long-term sustainable demand for corn production.
Well, what we have here domestically, corn is grown in about 100 million acres. And so 48% of the corn production is used for animal feed, 30% biofuels, 22% exports. But we still have this mass surplus that we need to find a use for. We are looking for people that have these ideas and want to put it to use and use these bushels of corn.
Learn more online at radical.vc and join us the first Wednesday of every month for the Monthly Grind on AOA.
challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, where we take a close look at the benefits of cooperative ownership. Every week, we'll host a new guest and discuss how you can get the most from working with your local cooperative. And we'll learn why farmers and ranchers just like you choose cooperatives to help them persevere and prosper. Tune in each Tuesday or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
Being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Stargardt disease was supposed to define me.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
A blinding eye disease attempted to force me away from doing what I was born to do.
But it cannot stop me. I have the tools.
I will keep moving forward.
Pushing past the limits of this disability.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Loss of sight won't blind our vision. Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
Agriculture of America today brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease created equal. Cenex premium greases made with high quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more online. Just go to cenex.com or find your nearest Cenex location and trust your local experts there today. Let's get an update on what's happening in the sunflower industry. Let's talk markets, policy, and more. Joining us now on AOA, Executive Director for the National Sunflower Association. Always good to talk with John Sandbachen from NSA. John, thanks for joining us again here on AOA. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well, Jesse, and thank you for having me on your program today, and hope you're doing well as also.
I'm doing great. Glad we could connect and have a conversation again. Get us up to speed on what's happening in the sunflower markets. Just in general, let's look at how markets are trading right now here in the U.S. and the globe. Can you give us kind of a high-level overview of where prices sit and how things are looking right now, John?
Well, you know, we're in a tougher situation this past fall and through the early part of this winter. The 22 crop that we had was about 48% larger than the one we had the year before. The 23 crop also, you know, our acres were down a little bit, but yields were phenomenal. We had the second highest national yield for sunflower in the country. So what happened was the market was sitting on a pretty good size amount of seed and prices dropped during harvest. And, you know, we really hadn't seen a lot of movement. And, you know, the one way to stop seed from coming into the plants is obviously to lower the price. And, you know, the plants are just getting kind of inundated, and so prices drop. But, you know, we've kind of, you know, the bottom is kind of in right now, I think. We've seen some upward movement here in the last couple of weeks. We've gained on nearby prices about 75 cents. New crop is up about 50 cents. So I think the market is adjusting. I think everybody is, you know, given this, the stocks that we have right now, you know, people are looking at, you know, 24 acres to be down somewhat in the U.S. But in talking to some folks, you know, that's an opportunity. You know, they're looking at where new crop is at. We're pretty competitive on new crop prices versus other crops. And they're thinking that by, you know, planting sunflowers this year, they're going to see some strength, you know, as the seed supply shrinks, you know, into that 24-25 frame.
Well, I know, too, palm oil has been on a move higher here in recent days. Is that spilling over and giving any support here to the sunflower oil market, et cetera, John?
We get, you know, definitely, you know, one thing that has really been affecting the market is the global price of sunflower oil. The two largest exporters in the world are Ukraine and Russia. And what they have been doing, this also affected seed prices here domestically, is that they were just dumping oil in the market. They were selling way below market value. They were at like $750 a metric ton, and the U.S. was at $1,600 a ton. And so they were significantly below where the market should be at. They're obviously just trying to create cash, you know, with the war going on. And so they were just dumping their product. And like I said, at that price, at that $750, they're below palm oil prices, which is normally, you know, your cheapest veg oil that you find out there. So with the strength that we're seeing there, that's showing that, you know, sun oil is going to start moving higher. And in fact, they think that basically the Russians and the Ukrainians have sold most of their oil. And by the spring, we're going to start to see a rebound in sun oil prices, which is very positive for seed prices.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the Black Sea region. I saw some notes here on Tuesday morning that Ukraine, their exports of sun oil in February exceeded last year's figure by 50%. It largely feels like Ukraine has gotten back to a point where they're on par with pre-Russian invasion levels in terms of their ag exports. So I have to think, to your point, John, that's something that is definitely having an effect on the worldwide sunflower oil markets, et cetera, John.
You know, definitely. You know, it's obviously when you're basically giving your oil away, you're going to find a lot of customers. And, you know, that just the situation where they're just trying to generate cash. And, you know, it's that's why their numbers are up. And, you know, it's really honestly amazing. When the war first started, they thought that basically it would shut everything down. But it just shows you the ingenuity of how people can work around the system and figure out ways to still move product.
Do you think, you mentioned you'd heard a little chatter that acreage could be down here in the U.S. this year. When do you think we'll have a better handle on that? Will it come with the end of the month prospective plantings numbers that we'll get broadly from USDA, or could it be later in the spring before we have a better handle on what some of that acreage is looking like here for oilseed crops, John?
Well, you know, we'll get a first good number on March 28th when USDA releases their prospective acres report. It kind of gives everybody a look at what other crops are sitting. I mean, and obviously, I think bean acres are going to be up. I think corn will probably be down somewhat. Wheat is probably going to be down somewhat. But what it overdoes is gives everybody a shot just to see what everybody else is thinking of. And usually, you know, from that March report, there's always going to be some kind of an adjustment. And I think, you know, when folks see that sunflower acres are going to be down, they're going to think, well, you know what, that's probably a market opportunity I might want to take a look at. And maybe I don't want to cut my acreage back so far, because if everybody else is doing it, it might be something that I might be able to take advantage of at stronger prices next year.
We're talking with John Sandbachen, Executive Director of the National Sunflower Association, here today on AOA. John, let's turn our attention to policy. I know you just got back from D.C. We're waiting on a new farm bill, of course. We're trying to navigate through that on Capitol Hill. We've been trying to navigate the appropriations process, of course. What's some of the latest that you heard in terms of this farm bill? Are we going to be able to get something done ahead of the presidential election? I guess, where do things stand? What did you hear while you were out in Washington, D.C., John?
Well, you know, right now the top issue is getting all the appropriation bills passed. And, you know, we obviously had that package that passed last week, which included the agriculture budget. But there's a bigger group that's going to be coming through here, but it has to be done by March 22nd. And that's been the main focus of Congress, has been on getting appropriations done. You know, I know that everybody was still talking, you know, publicly that they're very positive that we'll still get a farm bill done. But in essence, if we don't get that bill done, you know, within April, May at the latest, I mean, it's going to be very unlikely that we'll see a farm bill. We'll probably see another extension. And I think, honestly, most folks that we visited with, given the position that, you know, with the election, there could be turnover. Republicans could take back the Senate. Democrats might take back the House. Obviously, we might even have a new president. You know, everybody is kind of, you know, trying to get themselves into position where they think they'll have the most leverage. And it just sounds like, you know, we probably will end up having a stalemate this year, and a farm bill will not be done. And it's going to roll over into 2025 once the new Congress is in place and potentially a new president. And just overall, I think, honestly, for my years of experience, I think it'd be highly doubtful we're going to see a farm bill this year.
Well, and to that point, I mean, I know a lot of folks want to see one get done, but they also don't want a farm bill to be rushed through necessarily. Would you agree with that it's maybe more important to try and get it right, even if we have to delay again another year here, John?
Definitely, I agree. It's better to have a good farm bill than just to have a farm bill. It doesn't make sense. Obviously, one of the couple of things that we're pushing is we're pushing for to get more help with premium subsidies for crop insurance to make that a better program so people can buy better coverage, higher coverage. Reference prices need to be addressed. Obviously, with the input costs that producers are facing right now, the reference prices that are in place are just not adequate. And that's been this position of Republicans to support that. Obviously, on the Democratic side, they're more worried about what's going to happen with food programs, SNAP, things like that. And I just think that there can be a good compromise made, but it's probably one that I'd rather see a good farm bill put in place rather than just getting a farm bill done.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes on what's happening in D.C. for sure. John, I want to mention this as well, let you give us a plug. I know the deadline is approaching for the National Sunflower Association Memorial Scholarship. Can you talk about that a little bit and how folks can apply for that?
Well, every year we give away a scholarship to a student that is looking to get into, sunflower research, especially we'd prefer. It's a $5,000 scholarship. It could be at any university here in the United States. It's in honor of Kurt Stern, who was one of our pioneers in our industry. And for those that would be interested in getting more information, it's at the North Dakota Community Foundation. And there'll be all the information. Look for the Curtis Stern Memorial Scholarship. And we always have had some very worthy candidates and some good recipients.
And you can find details online, ndcf.net. Again, that is ndcf.net. And as John said, look for the Kurt Stern Memorial Scholarship there for more details. That deadline coming up April 1st. John, it's always great to have a conversation with you here. Thanks for joining us on AOA. Real quick, any final thoughts for us on what to watch in the sunflower industry here in the next few weeks?
Well, I think we're going to have an early spring this year, so I think things are going to get rolling pretty quick. It's one of those years where, we're not going to face wet conditions overall, and I think it's going to be a good season for everybody, and hopefully sunflower acres aren't going to decrease as much as I think they will.
Learn more, sunflowernsa.com. With that, the executive director of the National Sunflower Association, John Sandbach. And John, thanks for joining us here on Agriculture of America. Always good to chat with you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Jesse. I'm in your program today.
All right. Coming up next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. Learn more at Cenex.com. We're going to talk meat exports with Dan Hallstrom from the U.S. Meat Export Federation. He joins us next here on AOA, Agriculture of America.
When it comes to cereal disease protection, Prosaro Pro 400 SC fungicide from Bayer makes all the difference. With three effective active ingredients for overlapping control of foliar and head diseases, and a flexible application window for head scab, it's formulated to lower DON, protect yield potential, and promote superior grain quality. Prosaro Pro. The future of plant health starts here. Visit ProsaroPro.com to learn more. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Young farmers don't listen to the radio, right? Wrong. In a recent survey, 74% of young producers said they get their most important agricultural information from their trusted farm radio station. Surprised? Don't be. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Radio is the perfect companion because it goes with you everywhere. Whether you're in the shop, on the combine, or in the truck, farm radio is right there with you. This message brought to you by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
Here's a check of markets. You're listening to AOA. Jesse Allen with you here as we take a look at how things are trading early on this Tuesday. Quiet mixed in the grain and oilseed trade and in livestock as well. After four straight higher closes, May corn did start Tuesday a bit weaker in slow trade. Weather in South America remains mostly favorable, although a drier trend in central and northern Brazil is a bit of a concern. However, according to the European weather model, both Rio Grande do Sul and much of Argentina's crop areas are expected to see good rains over the next 10 days. There is some concern part of Brazil could be drier than desired, with little rain on tap for key areas of the Safrina corn crop. Now, speaking of Brazil, CONAB, Brazil's version of USDA, dropped their production estimates for quartered soybeans out Tuesday morning. They pegged this year's soybean crop in Brazil at 146 million metric tons, down from 149 the previous month, and that's below USDA's recent estimate of 155. Their all corn production estimate, that's down to 112.75, down from 113.6 the previous month, and that's down from USDA's estimate of 124. And this is going to, again, increase the debate over the size of this year's crops in Brazil. Something to watch closely. We got consumer price index data out as well on Tuesday morning. The headline CPI rose 0.4% month-on-month in February, matching analyst expectations, but up from 0.3% in January. Headline CPI was up 3.2% year-on-year in February, beating analyst expectations it would remain unchanged at 3.1%. Core CPI, excluding the more volatile food and energy sectors, was up 0.4% month-on-month in February, exceeding analyst expectations of 0.3%. The VIX trading near 15 here this morning. Crude oil prices modestly lower, while again we see quiet mixed action in grains and oilseeds, and the same goes for the livestock trade as well. That's a check of the market action here this hour. You're listening to AOA for the American Ag Network. I'm Jesse Allen reporting.
Now. We tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But sometimes we don't see what's right in front of us. Victory over cancer is in front of us. Right now, cancer research is saving lives. Cancer research funded by the V Foundation is leading to new discoveries and new treatments, and ultimately, one day, victory over cancer. Right now, one out of every two men and one out of every three women will get cancer in their lifetime. Now is your moment. You may save someone you love. The V Foundation has the skill, the speed, and the strength to achieve victory over cancer. Because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory. Learn more at V.org.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Sedex. Not all grease created equal. Sedex premium greases are made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more at sedex.com. Jesse Allen back with you here. Thanks for sticking with us on the show today. Let's talk meat exports, a rapid start for 2024 pork exports. We're going to talk about that more. Joining us now, Dan Hallstrom with the U.S. Meat Export Federation is here on AOA. Dan, it is good to talk with you again. Thanks for joining us on the show today. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, doing great, Jesse. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with that pork side of the equation. Again, I mentioned a rapid start. I think continuing that same theme we saw throughout 2023 with very strong pork exports as well. Get us up to speed on some of those strong gains as we get going with the year here.
Well, Jesse, you're exactly right. That momentum that we had the last quarter of last year continues in January. We were a little over 250,000 tons, which was growth of 6% on the volume side, and we were just about $682 million, which is growth, coincidentally, of 6% on the value side. But it's the same story we heard late last year. I mean, the golden star is, of course, continues to be Mexico, a very big month there with growth of 6% on volume. But it doesn't stop there. You know, Central America, who had great results last year, continues to excel. 22% growth there. Colombia, huge month in January, 10,000 tons, 57% growth. So the Latin American community continues to strive for U.S. pork. But kind of segueing real quick on pork to Asia, Korea, a huge month. And we've been waiting for that. The anecdotal info we were getting from our offices and our members was positive, and it finally showed up here in January. Growth of 53%, over almost 21,000 tons. So the theme's the same, broad-based growth across quite a few different markets for pork.
Well, thinking of pork here, especially with Mexico continuing to be the shining star, Dan, it's not just, you know, we've heard a lot in the past about some of those different cuts that maybe U.S. consumers, you know, didn't prefer. We see more of those cuts in countries like Mexico and Latin America, et cetera, but I've noticed too, looking through some of this data, it's center of the plate cuts as well that are getting a lot of popularity in Mexico, aren't they?
Exactly right. Yeah, it's growth from all sectors. I mean, the traditional sector is hams going into further processing, which still is a large, as well as into retail, which is still a large part of the business. But we're seeing growth in other primals like the loin, bone-in and boneless loins for center of the plate preparation. Both retail and food service has been popular. The shoulder continues to also be an item that's featured with pork butts in particular. So yeah, it's we're in a pretty good place in terms of maximizing that carcass down in Mexico.
Well, and I know this as well. I know USMEF done a lot of work, a lot of outreach throughout, you know, Central Latin America, Mexico, Asia, et cetera, really trying to showcase a lot of these different varieties and different cuts. And really, it's been in a great awareness campaign in many of these countries for U.S. meat, hasn't it, Dan?
It really has. I mean, one of our missions is to continue to tell our story. And part of that story is maximizing the value of the carcass and maximizing and educating people about and customers about the different parts of the carcass, whether it's loins or hams or even variety meats, pork or beef variety meats for that matter. You know, the ability to use all of the carcass and give them options, give these customers options. They're always looking for new ideas, new culinary approaches. And that's a lot of what we do on a daily basis, is to go in there and work with these companies and explain that just because you did something a certain way for a long time, there are other things we can do with other products. And it's really quite a bit of fun to work with these companies.
Dan, let's talk on the beef side a little more in depth. As I was kind of glancing at the numbers here, I noticed that exports were down ever so slightly, but that export value definitely had a nice increase here last month. Talk about that for us a little bit.
Yeah, I think in a way the theme's similar on beef to what it was late last year as well. You know, we were just slightly down, as you mentioned, on the volume, but the value was up 9%, almost $764 million exported. I think what this tells me is that even though production is down and we know we're short cattle at the moment, people are still willing to pay for U.S. beef, even though the prices are incrementally higher. And Mexico, you know, has been that way. They were that way last year. Once again, Mexico, similar to pork on the beef side, is the star, up 15% year on year off of a record year last year. But it doesn't stop there. I mean, Central America, another theme consistent with pork. Central America continues to do well, with almost 10% growth in January. But the real thing I'm excited about on the beef side is we're starting to see some life out of Asia. Korea was steady on volume, but up 13% on value. The info we're getting out of our Korean market is activity is picking up, especially on food service. So this is exciting because food service, as we all know, on beef was a drag in Asia last year. And at least in the case of Korea, it appears to be turning that corner, which is good news going forward into 2024.
Well, Dan, I want to stay on that food service aspect here in Asia as well, because to your point, and we've talked about this here the last few months, it was a bit of a drag last year. I know you guys, USMEF, have done a lot of outreach and work specifically on food service in Asia to try and, you know, help them as their market starts to rebound here post-pandemic, et cetera. And to your point, that is a huge opportunity for U.S. meat exports, isn't it?
It really is. And quite honestly, pre-COVID, the cornerstone of our business in Asia was beef for food service. And retail over the years has grown because of food service. So it's the whole deal's flipped a little bit right now. But nevertheless, the cornerstone, the base of our business tends to be food service. So, you know, Japan even is showing a little bit of turnaround as well. The drag still is China. You know, China, we had folks, you know, in China last week. Jihei Yang, our VP of Asia, spent the week last week. And unfortunately, China continues to be very conservative. You know, quite frankly, the economy is probably dragging a bit, and they have yet to rebound. But Japan and Korea, two of our larger markets, is a different story. And we're definitely looking forward to seeing some of that, you know, the international tourism, the international business travel is starting to gain some steam and get back to, maybe not to normal, but on the track back to normal.
We're talking with USMEF President and CEO Dan Hallstrom here today on AOA. Dan, let's look at lamb exports as well real quick. The largest in 10 months. Am I seeing that right? Give us an update on the lamb side of the equation, Dan.
Yeah, lamb, which once again falls in that food service category. I'm excited to see lamb's performance in January. It was led by the Caribbean region, which is typical, but it's dramatic growth, through several different locations in the Caribbean. Canada had a good month, and Mexico, while down slightly on the volume, the value was up. So, you know, once again, 53% growth on the value year on year on what we know is a higher priced item, a specialty item designed for food service. That kind of falls right in line with the rest of our discussion around food service. So it's good to see some of this rebound in these higher end markets.
Well, Dan, as we kind of wrap up our conversation here today, I think across the board, more good numbers. We continue to watch the work that U.S. Meat Export Federation does. I think all of this speaks to the continued economic sustainability of the U.S. Meat export industry, doesn't it, Dan?
Well, it sure does. I mean, what we need is we need to have international demand hitting on all cylinders, and ideally, at the same time, domestic demand does, because that drives the growth and the cutout, the product cutout, which in essence drives higher prices for the live side. So you're exactly right. The reason this business continues is that it's economically sustainable for both sides, for the U.S. side as well as our customers around the world.
I know folks can look at the full report, usmef.org. Dan, final thoughts, anything you want to mention or reiterate for us here on AOA today?
Well, I think we all know what's going on beef, and we know we're in a down cycle in terms of supply. But the one thing I'd like to leave folks with is that the question we're getting is not so much why are the prices higher? The question is, why can't we get more supply? And more importantly, when can we get more supply? So I think we're in a pretty good spot there. Customers around the world understand economics. They understand that prices are going to be relatively higher, and they're willing to pay it for the most part. So I think we just have to be patient, work with our customers, give them alternatives, and eventually we will see a higher supply once the cycle works through.
Dan, always great to talk with you. Thanks for catching up with us here this month and giving us a rundown of the latest export numbers. Have a great week, Dan. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Jesse.
Dan Hallstrom, U.S. Meat Export Federation President and CEO, joining us here today on AOA. You can learn more at usmef.org. AOA today brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex Premium Diesel fuel. Learn more at cenex.com. We'll be back. We'll take a look at news headlines on the way next here on AOA, Agriculture of America.
We are the nation's largest integrated healthcare system, providing life-changing care to over 9 million veterans.
Our hands are busy. Competent, skilled, healing, helping, and friendly. A place where diverse teams come together hand in hand to provide full patient-centered care. Working in state-of-the-art facilities with influential leaders in healthcare, all with a single goal in mind: to help veterans heal, recover, and get their lives back. In a place where everyone plays a part, and where your efforts are truly appreciated. A place so innovative and forward-thinking that we're rebuilding hands, and where even robots lend a hand.
Join hands with us. Learn more at vacareers.va.gov.
Being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Stargardt disease was supposed to define me.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
A blinding eye disease attempted to force me away from doing what I was born to do.
But it cannot stop me. I have the tools.
I will keep moving forward.
Pushing past the limits of this disability.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Great vision doesn't require great sight. Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Make your impact today. Donate now at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
On the March episode of the Monthly Grind with the National Corn Growers Association, we learn about the newly launched Radical Challenge and the need for finding new uses for corn with Dr. Alex Buck, Director of Industrial Innovation at Iowa Corn, and Chad Epler, NCGA's Market Development Action Team Vice Chair.
The Radical Challenge is an open innovation challenge. It sets out to invest a minimum of $1.5 million checkoff dollars into startup and growth companies from around the world so that we can drive new uses for corn and develop long-term sustainable demand for corn production.
Well, what we have here domestically, corn is grown in about 100 million acres. And so 48% of the corn production is used for animal feed, 30% biofuels, 22% exports. But we still have this mass surplus that we need to find a use for. We are looking for people that have these ideas and want to put it to use and use these bushels of corn.
Learn more online at radical.vc and join us the first Wednesday of every month for the Monthly Grind on AOA. This is Around the Table, where we explore the benefits of cooperative ownership. Today, we're at Commodity Classic, talking with Ron Beatty, Director of Refined Fuels Pricing and Economics for CHS, about the evolution of the energy industry. Ron, we hear plenty about alternative fuels in the headlines, but where do you see the most potential for American producers? What scenarios are being considered?
Hey, thanks, Jesse. Well, at CHS, we have a series of energy scenarios we're studying, and the key indicators today really show we're going to have a mix of solutions between electrification and biofuels, and renewable diesel is coming on pretty strong right now.
Well, what's the state of renewable diesel production today?
Absolutely. Renewable diesel, what we're witnessing is a birth of a new industry. We have a few billion gallons that came online this year. It's new supply chains are being established. It's really an emerging and quick-moving energy source.
Well, Ron, what's driving the growth and does it have staying power? Is that growth expected to continue? How much of the energy market share could renewable diesel eventually capture?
Well, we're looking at a place where we have a pipeline of plants that go to 7 to 9 billion gallons a year over the next 3 to 5 years. That is a tremendous growth that's already in the hopper, right? This is dirt being moved, plants being put in, and the financial incentives are really federal and state driven. And as long as those supports are there, the growth is going to continue. We're looking at California, Oregon, Washington, and it's just at the beginning stages. So the growth is there.
Could renewables overtake traditional diesel?
Now, we think absolutely not. And the reason for that is if you take all the vegetable oils on the planet Earth, we're at 10 to 15% of the global diesel demand. It is a wonderful way to help decarbonize. It's part of the solution, but it will not overtake traditional diesel.
We've been talking with Ron Beatty from CHS here at Around the Table. Ron, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Jesse.
And thank you for joining us Around the Table. Learn more about the benefits of cooperative ownership at cooperativeownership.com.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And thanks for sticking with us here today on AOA, Agriculture of America, our program brought to you by our friends at Cenex. You can find your nearest Cenex location and trust your local experts there. Or if you don't know where your nearest Cenex location is, just go to Cenex.com for more information. Cenex can help you determine the right high-quality premium lubricants to keep equipment protected for the long haul. Again, trust your local experts at Cenex. Learn more at Cenex.com. Well, let's take a look at news headlines here as we wrap up our program today. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on Monday announced the finalization of a rule to align the voluntary product of USA label claim with consumer understanding of what the claim means. Vilsack made the announcement during a speech to attendees of the National Farmers Union annual convention in Scottsdale, Arizona. Vilsack said in part, quote, "This final rule will ensure that when consumers see product of USA, they can trust the authenticity of that label," end quote. Now, USDA's final rule allows the voluntary product of USA or made in the USA label claim to be used on meat, poultry, and egg products only when they are derived from animals born, raised, slaughtered, and processed in the United States. Now, the rule will prohibit misleading U.S. origin labeling in the market and help ensure that the information consumers receive about where their food comes from is truthful. Now, Vilsack says the rule won the support of thousands of stakeholders and consumers and will take effect later while regulatory labeling guidance takes effect January 1st of 2026.
We are now on record as being for the utilization of that label only, when the animal is born, raised, slaughtered, and processed in the U.S.
And the product of USA or made in the USA label claim under the rule would not need to be pre-approved by USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service, but an establishment would have to keep documentation on file to support the claim. Separately, Vilsack announced USDA will award $9.5 million in equipment grants to 42 projects through its Local Meat Capacity or MCAP program.
The purpose of this program is to not only expand and diversify meat and poultry processing that are producer-owned, but to create jobs in rural places, to create consumer choice, and also to increase competition and greater resiliency.
Now, the Agricultural Marketing Service will make the grants available with American Rescue Plan funds, the first set of awards going to projects in 27 states and Puerto Rico. Also, AMS will take new steps to boost transparency and competition in the U.S. seed industry through its Farmer Seed Liaison Initiative and a nationwide website monitoring program to review Seed Act brand and variety name compliance. Well, farmers not yet enrolled in the agriculture risk coverage or price loss coverage programs for the 2024 crop year have until March 15th, that's Friday, to revise elections and sign contracts. Both safety net programs delivered by USDA's Farm Service Agency support farmers who experience substantial declines in crop prices or revenues for the 2024 crop year. Now, producers can elect coverage and enroll in ARC County or PLC, which provide crop-by-crop protection, or ARC Individual, which protects the entire farm. Now, although election changes for 2024 are optional, producers must enroll with a signed contract each year. Now, if a producer has a multi-year contract on the farm, the contract will continue for 2024 unless an election change is made. If producers do not submit their election revision by the March 15th deadline, the election remains the same as their 2023 election for eligible commodities on the farm. For more information on ARC and PLC, contact your local USDA service center. Again, that deadline is coming up here on Friday. Well, new data from USDA's Economic Research Service shows that changes in drought conditions impact the size of the U.S. beef cattle herd. Specifically, when the percentage of land area of drought increases for an extended period, as noted in the U.S. Drought Monitor, the U.S. beef cattle herd often declines. In 2023, when more than 65% of U.S. land area in drought, the U.S. beef cattle herd declined roughly 2.5%. When drought conditions diminish forage production and availability, beef cattle producers often must buy supplemental feed and forage or reduce their herd size. Periods of more intense drought are associated with decreases in the U.S. beef cattle herd size, such as when the national beef cattle herd shrank about 1-2% a year during drought between 2011 and 2015. Other factors outside of drought conditions also influence changes in the beef cattle herd size, including feed and forage prices, extreme precipitation events, supply chain issues, and the natural life cycles of livestock. Well, World to Rebuild Rural Ukraine reports that Ukraine managed to export 8 million metric tons of agricultural products in February, 3.4% more than the previous month. Of that, 5.2 million metric tons were exported through the Sea Corridor, a record volume since the beginning of Russia's large-scale invasion of Ukraine. Now, since August of last year, 19 million metric tons of agricultural products have been shipped to forward markets, which is 68% of the total volume of cargo. Ukraine has shipped 2.5 million metric tons of grain and oil through the Danube ports during the first months of 2024. Now, meanwhile, exports of sunflower oil in February exceeded last year's figure by 50% as 603,000 metric tons were exported. And Ukraine exported 8,500 metric tons of dairy products in February, an increase of 22% from last year. With planting season underway, World to Rebuild Rural Ukraine reports costs for the four main expense components, fertilizers, chemicals, seed, and fuel, are down 5% this year for grains and 4% for oil seeds for Ukrainian farmers. And finally, here as we wrap up news headlines today on AOA, this winter was the warmest ever recorded in the mainland United States, according to data showed on Friday from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The average temperature in the so-called lower 48 U.S. states from December 2023 to February 2024 was 37.6 degrees Fahrenheit, and that is the highest in a record that goes back to the 1890s. It was 5.4 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. The second warmest winter came in 2016, which averaged 36.8 degrees Fahrenheit. The coldest on record came in 1979, which was 26.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, eight states across the upper Midwest, Great Lakes, and Northeast saw the warmest winters on record, boosted in part by the El Nino weather pattern. The heat continued through February as well. Data showed average temperatures for the contiguous U.S., which excluded Hawaii, Alaska, and offshore territories, was 41.1 degrees Fahrenheit for the month, 7.2 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and the third warmest on record. So if you thought it was warm this winter, well, you were right. That's going to do it for AOA here today, brought to you by Cenex. Learn more about Cenex Premium Diesel, visit your nearest location, or go online to cenex.com. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks for listening to AOA.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.